case number 8, which is Rommel Carter v. Astrup.
May it please the Honorable Court, an honor to appear before the Seventh Circuit and Justice and Counsel. Stuart Galesburg representing Appellant Rommel Carter. The arguments we have are both legal and substantial evidence from the decision of the administrative law judge. Mr. Carter was a 28-year-old Afro-American male. On July 8, 1999, while working for Northwest Airlines, his foot, right foot, was crushed between two forklifts, and he had a surgery within 24 hours at Resurrection. And he worked regularly before that, both for Northwest and a prior work history. He had bipolar disorder when he was 23 due to a breakup with his girlfriend. He lived common law with his wife and common law with his, we don't recognize it here in Illinois, but he had two children and one on the way, so he had three minor daughters subsequent to his accident. The legal argument refers to adult mental impairments under Section 12 of the listings. And it goes to the Social Security Administration obligation to measure the effects of his drugs, which were five psychotropic drugs that he took beginning in March of 2000 for depressant. That was doxepine, RIC, from Dr. Hardin. And that's missed. In the brief, it's missed, it's mentioned, but missed in the finding of the ALJ. Then he went to, and of course it's a workers' comp injury, but the carrier was inconsistent in payment of benefits, payment of medical for drugs. So he went to Cook County Hospital. And the award, initial award, was in 02 by the first ALJ, Templin, which gave him a closed period of medical disability from July of 99 to July of 2000. The mental part progressively began, and it manifested itself first at RIC in March of 2000, where he was prescribed. But the carrier did not, they had a rehab person on him, and they did not look at any psychological aspects. The ALJ also, in the legal part, did not look at the side effects of the psychotropic medications, which started with doxepine in 2000, 11-15-01 through March of 02. He went to Zoloft and Zyprexa. These are all psychotropic medications, mind-altering. On 1-02, Dr. Rogers, a psychiatrist, along with Chenoy, who treated him, a psychiatrist treated him in Cook County, said he should increase Zoloft and increase another drug, and that his judgment was impaired. He drove there with his left foot and an uninsured vehicle. That questions judgment, gave him a GFA, global functioning assessment, at 30. Then the carrier, the comp carrier, had him examined by psychiatrist Wolfram in 02. And Dr. Wolfram said he sustained a physical injury and a mental injury, and that he was under control with meds but could not work due to some side effects of sleepiness from the drugs. His orthopedic surgeon, foot specialist Armin Kalikian, referred him to Dr. Elkin in April of 03. Dr. Elkin prescribed along the way, Effexor, Zoloft, Buspar, Risperdal, Clonazepam, and this individual had alcohol abuse. He tried to commit suicide more than once. He would drink. He would be inconsistent with his drugs. These aspects were called decompensation under the holdings from this court. And decompensation is pace, concentration, persistent, and pace, and other things. Altering of drugs, stressors. He had child support. He had litigation. I helped him get public aid. It was denied. I had to go to Chancery to get him a green card so he could get medical care. He came up on the ADA. He was terminated. He had a right foot. He flunked his typing test. He tried to get back to work. He couldn't get back to work. The fact that the ALJ wanted to show the positive aspects of what he did and that he was litigious, I did the litigation. He wasn't there actively participating. He visited. I got him custody of his three children. He was concerned about their schooling. He did webcasts. He worked. He delivered pizzas once a week at Nesty's Pizza for gas money when he was in town to visit his children. The child support judge and the wife stopped his regular visitation with his children. These were the types of litigation he had. He wasn't out suing people. This was all related to the accident which altered his life. And in decompensation, it not only altered his life, it altered his mind with the drugs, which were never assessed, never mentioned by the ALJ as required by Section 12, nor the effect of alcohol abuse in the listings in 12. That was never gone into. In fact, it was denied. The ALJ said, I'm not going to go into that. We're not going to discuss the use of alcohol. But he never drank before that. He drank hardly, but he couldn't have drank. He wouldn't have got the 1 year of open medical. So they didn't find that. And the substantial evidence argument is that the ALJ used Dr. Rudolph initially, who was asked for by Judge Templin, I think 2002, and then took the opinion of Dr. Mosk in a 28-page narrative report, hired secondarily to the psychiatrist from the workers' comp carrier, and the psychologist, both psychologists, but especially Dr. Mosk, said this man can return to his regular employment at Northwest Airlines, and he has no psychiatric disability. He's commenting on giving psychiatric opinions as a psychologist, and he says he has no psychotropic need. He has no need for psychotropics. So he's overruling two examining psychiatrists, Rogers and Wolfram, and Shenoy and Elkin. They're all almost in line. And what I'm saying is, to substantial evidence, the ALJ ignores the findings of psychiatrists in severe mental illness, because his diagnoses were major depression from chronic pain, which he kept with lidoderm patches. He had RSD of the right foot, so he had to live with that and a cane. Suicidal, homicidal, alcohol abuse, anxiety disorder, and then when we had the vocational expert, Mr. Yep, said that if he was able to function at 85%, he had to function at 85% to sustain gainful employment, SGA, and couldn't miss more than 12 days or be tardy 12 days, or there was no job for him. The ALJ ignored that or didn't go into how do you determine what 85% is. And the workers' comp voc rehab person, Knapp, in 2004, said this man is not a candidate for any vocational rehab. This is a person who should seek psychiatric treatment. And I would ask that this honorable court remand, as the facts are similar in the cases filed of McCluskey and Larson, filed rendered by this court in 2010. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Mr. Goldstein.
May it please the court. The commissioner argued in his principal brief to the court that all issues have been waived. In reply, Mr. Carter did not address that argument, did not show how issues had not been waived. Therefore, it's our position that all the issues raised before the court this morning in the principal brief and in the reply brief were waived for failure to raise below. Raised some fairly specific issues, and these specific issues were not raised below. Mr. Carter argues that the attacks the ALJ's decision. This case contains a 38-page ALJ's decision. It's comprehensive. It's thorough. It's detailed. It discusses all the evidence. It contains analysis. It's hard to see what more could be asked for. Mr. Carter says that the ALJ did not discuss his drug side effects, and we listed in our brief the many pages in which the ALJ addressed the drugs and the alleged side effects. Side effects, of course, are allegations, and that goes to a person's credibility. And although credibility is not directly attacked, the ALJ's credibility finding, but certainly is implicated. And Mr. Carter's credibility, given his wide range of activities, he prepared it weekly, spent 2 days a week preparing his internet radio show for publication. He traveled interstate. He went on picnics with his radio show partner. He worked with his partner. He had frequent contact with his young daughters. He worked out at Bally's. He worked out at the YMCA. And he did a variety of household chores. He delivered pizzas. And, of course, the litigation, which he said took most of his time. That wide range of litigation, which he has been involved with spawning from his foot injury, also was an activity to be considered. He also has a litany of intentional misstatements, which call into question his credibility. He told the agency and the first ALJ that he had no work activity when, in fact, he did. He was delivering pizzas. He told the ALJ that he didn't do any radio DJ work when, in fact, he did. He told examiners that he lived in a shelter, which makes him seem worse off than he was when, in fact, at the time he said that, he was not. Then he told doctors that he was taking medications when, as the ALJ details at some length in the decision, he was not consistently taking medications. Moreover, during the period at issue, he was arrested twice for making false allegations with relation to his relationships. Vigorously pursued reemployment, as was mentioned this morning, with Northwest Airlines, with that company, but he didn't seek employment elsewhere for some reason. Just quickly mention the doctor's opinions. They were mentioned this morning. There were opinions from five psychologists or psychiatrists that the ALJ relied on. Two MMPIs, which are psychological tests, which showed symptom embellishment, and Dr. Mosk and Dr. Rudolph endorsed those findings, that he was embellishing the symptoms. Dr. Mosk diagnosed malingering and secondary gain. The Rehabilitation Institute of Chicago doctors, a counseling clinic therapist and physical therapist questioned his compliance and his motivation. Examining psychologist said no mental restrictions, and even his own treating psychologist urged him to return to school to get more skills. So here, in sum, there was a broad range of substantial evidence supporting the ALJ's decision. The decision's well articulated. It's free from legal error. And absent any questions, we would ask the court to affirm.
Thank you, counsel.
In the district court, on the issue of waiver, I brought up the Section 12 mental impairments as to the ALJ not taking in that consideration. And I don't consider that waived. It was expanded after reading Seventh Circuit holdings. His activity in computers, he mentioned activity in computers. The ALJ Googled him and found his name, but he did that for free, not for money. He had to do something to occupy his time. But again, they took the positive aspects. The ALJ took the positive aspects of his life with his children, didn't consider the negatives, the decompensation factors, as I said before, and the life-altering injury and the resulting psychiatric problems. The appellee doesn't even mention one drug, psychotropic drug, one psychiatric diagnosis. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Kisberg. Thanks to both counsel. The case is taken under advisement. We move to case number 9, United States.